You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 in Port Townsend. And welcome, you're very welcome, to join us at Book Lovers Cafe. Book Lovers Cafe is a program of author interviews and book reviews from around the sound and beyond. And I'm your host, Chris Wilson. Today, we're going to be talking to Joe Gillard. He lives right here in Port Townsend. He is a history buff, and he's the founder of History Hustle. Now, History Hustle is not a book. It's a digital publication for history fans. So, you know, a lot of people read from their devices nowadays, so I thought this would be a great opportunity to talk about some of that new way of gaining knowledge. But he also has a book in print. It's called The Little Book of Lost Words. It's like collywobbles, nollygusters, and surprisingly, other useful terms worth resurrecting. So we're going to be talking about that fun book as well. Welcome, Joe. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Chris. It's really, really fun to be here.
Yes. I'm ready for some fun, I'll tell you. You know, it's been a year. So I'm ready to be lighthearted and enjoy us again. And I'd like to know from you, how did this all begin? This, first of all, the whole History Hustle, how did that come to be?
Yeah, so it was a concept that I came up with in 2016. Basically, at that time, on the internet, there was kind of a trend of new Facebook pages and digital publications that were catering to kind of the geek culture, you might say. There were science pages like IFL Science and these other publications that were brand new, digitally native, and they were reaching millions of people on social media with a variety of different types of content. But it was all kind of, you know, science-based or word nerds and things like that. And I thought at the time there wasn't anything I found for history buffs as there was for science. And I thought that there was a need to kind of create a history-focused, digitally native history media brand. There were existing similar types of brands out there, but in my mind, they didn't quite capture the type of history buff that I was after.
Yeah. So I found you on YouTube because, you know, that's one of the places I go for documentaries and strange off-the-wall things. And that's kind of where a video came to light, Art History in 90 Seconds, right? So what happened with that?
Well, I should point out, YouTube I really don't use for History Hustle at all. Although 5 years ago I did throw a video up there, but the video was, I think I originally posted it to Facebook. It was just, an experiment, kind of like a rapid, drive-by view of art history, with, you know, trying to make a funny little comment about each era of art history up until the present, art history in 90 seconds. And it was just a goofy little video I think I made on PowerPoint. And back then, so that was my first thing that had reached over a million people was that video somehow on Facebook. At a time when Facebook was really surfacing a lot of videos and they were pushing that pretty hard. So I got in at a good time with video content. That very marginal success of that video and people's reaction made me think that there was a reason to continue experimenting.
Mm-hmm. And somehow, from some through viral media, a book publisher heard about this. So that gave you an introduction to create The Little Book of Lost Words, right?
Yes. Well, there's actually some missing details there. So the video Art History in 90 Seconds was not the video that the book was based off of. Mm-hmm. A couple years ago, so this was years after, maybe 3 years after the art history video you mentioned, I posted another video in a similar slideshow format of old words. It was called 20 Awesome Words, or Awesome Historical Words We Should Bring Back, or something.
Mm-hmm.
It was on Facebook, and that one got about 18 million views. And again, this was at a time when Facebook was still kind of pushing these videos out to people. And so I happened to kind of post that at a good time. It got some traction. And what happened with the old words video was sometimes you'll see digital publications like BuzzFeed or Board Panda or Bustle. They will kind of borrow or steal, mm-hmm. you know, certain mm-hmm. images or content, and they'll make an article about it. And if they're nice, they'll give you credit. And so it was Board Panda, the viral media website, made an article out of that video with screenshots of the images. And fortunately, they did mention History Hustle at the bottom of the article. And so, so a literary agent in New York who browses the internet for various viral things.
What a job.
Right. Or at least I assume that's part of what he does.
A talent seeker.
Yeah. And a great guy. And he reached out to me and said, this might make a book. This might be a concept for a gift book.
Yes. And so here it is. I've been gifted with this book. And
yeah.
I'd like people to know a little bit more about it. So could you read from the introduction this morning?
Sure. There are very few treasures that we can dig out of the ground, dust off, and put into use as if they were brand new. Words, of course, are an exception. The purpose of this book is to provide you with your very own collection of treasures, ready to be resurrected and introduced into conversation with a delighted audience. I created this book to meet the demands of the modern speaker or writer to preserve language, colorfully express unique emotions, and personally connect to a rich history with the mere stroke of a key or vibration of the throat. It's hard to define exactly why we love these dusty, musty, archaic words. Is it the colorful way they sound as you speak them and hear them? Their odd specificity? Their uniqueness? They do come in a great variety. And while some sound fit only for impressing one's noble peers at an upper-crust Victorian ball, others sound like they were overheard late night in a dimly lit medieval tavern. Some have 10 equally evocative synonyms, while others may be the only word ever crafted to define a certain feeling. Whatever their origin, whatever their use, these words have this in common. They inevitably bring joy in their rediscovery. There's a word for that, you will say, in countless conversations, settings, and situations. Admittedly, we can see why some of these words faded away as the years slipped by and dictionaries were updated. I mean, do we really need a word for a warning that one is about to throw waste out of a window? That's gardy-loo. Perhaps not, but what enchantment there is in knowing that there is a word for it. Words, like traditions and customs, drop out of use when they go out of fashion. But unlike customs, which are tied to specific norms of their time, words can be brought back with an updated context. Practicality may chip away at our language, but the magic of the lost words in this book ought not to be forgotten. And I think that's probably enough.
Okay. Well, yes, they ought not to be forgotten. And so, dear listeners, I know you're dying to hear some more of these words. Okay, so gardy-loo, you might hear that, and you might think, loo, that's the English word for bathroom. Guard, guard the bathroom. But no, it's not quite that. What is it again?
Gardy-loo, yeah, and I think you're right. I think you're right about the etymology there. Probably came something like that. But this one, in my research, I found 17th century is a Scottish origin, a regional dialect of Scottish origin, and certainly something we don't use today, and wouldn't need to in that exact situation. But maybe we could be co-opted for modern times. Who knows?
Well, if you look at a Tudor building on a busy street, the upstairs windows kind of hang out over past the sidewalk. And then there are trenches in the road, and the trenches were for the waste to be thrown out the window and land in the trenches and not on the people underneath on the sidewalk. Anyway, some other words I really loved, and you also love them. They can refer to kind of modern situations. So, and especially our political situation, right? So there's a word, isn't there a word for, what am I thinking? Oh, the snollygoster.
Right.
What's a snollyguster? Do we have any of those around here?
I think probably too many. It's a 19th century American slang for a dishonest, corrupt, and unprincipled person, usually a politician.
Usually a politician. Oh, my goodness. And then there's a bunch of those politicians that use ultra-crepidarian. They're ultra-crepidarians. Right. They have opinions and they don't have any opinions based on facts and knowledge. They just spew forth.
Yes. A person with opinions on subjects beyond their knowledge.
That's right.
You see a lot of that on social media, probably me.
Yeah. And then they practice humbuggery. Now that sounds a little off color, but I think about Scrooge in A Christmas Carol going, bah, humbug.
Exactly.
But that's not exactly what humbuggery is, right?
It's similar. Nonsense, deceitful language. So it's certainly derived from the same type of exclamation, I think. And you know what's funny about some of these words that were used in England is sometimes I'll talk to people in the UK, and they'll say, this isn't an old word.
Mm-hmm.
We still use this word.
That's right.
And so it sounds old, and it certainly is unfamiliar to me over here, but for some of these words, people still use them in different parts of the world.
Yes, and I noticed that too, that some of them seemed, kind of familiar if you're like reading a lot of English literature and Shakespeare, definitely. And, 18th and 19th century novels. So, but there's one word that is completely easy to say and I've never heard of before. And that's the word for a person who works only when they're being watched.
Right.
And what's that word? Do you remember?
That's eye servant. Eye servant from all the way back in the 16th century. So a person who works only when someone is watching, which, of course, what more proof do you need that, people have never changed?
That's right. That's right. And, I see, the comical characters in a Shakespeare play that are, laboring and or doing something off to the side. And they are definitely eye servants. And that's beautiful. It I can see a lot. And compere. It's a close companion or an ally, and it kind of sounds like mon frère, but it's compère.
Right.
But obviously companion or a comrade. So, and peer is an equal, right? So
exactly. So
I don't know.
You can see the natural word.
Yeah.
And, I'm sure this one, I feel like I've seen this one in Shakespeare somewhere, I think it goes all the way back to the 13th century, and which is hard to imagine, back almost Chaucer era,
mm-hmm.
That word sounding so familiar to our ears. But that's one of my favorites,
mm-hmm.
because it's something we can call our friends or our allies, kind of like BFF.
Yeah. Okay. Mon compère. That's good. So. Another one I really like that I will definitely use is I'm going to send you a little notekin, small notekin, thanking you for, talking to me today. And that's very simply a little note. Isn't that wonderful? A little notekin.
I love that, yeah.
And then on the other side of things, I don't really like, but it does really sound like this. the shiviness. I feel shiviness. A little shiviness, right. That's the how you're feeling when you have uncomfortable undies on. You know, you're feeling a little shiviness.
Yeah. we can sort of imagine that back in the day. I don't know what they were wearing for underwear, but
oh, a lot of stuff. Women always felt the shiviness of everything, all the layers they had to wear, and they had to peel it all off and then jump into their snuggery.
There you go. And snuggery being a nice, small, cozy, snug place.
That's right. Everybody needs a snuggery with their dog, their cat, or their best beloved. I know. And once you're in your snuggery, now I really don't know how to pronounce this one, but it's like Utsieri, I want to say. Utsier. What do you think? The one that it starts UHT, and it's lying awake feeling anxious. Man, we've had some of that. Lying awake feeling anxious.
Yes, Utkiara.
Oh, there we go.
Is how a stuffy professor would tell you to pronounce it in Old English. Lying awake in bed feeling anxious, possibly the most relatable of these words.
Yes, totally relatable. And also for the followers of Marie Kondo, who, you know, is all about keeping tidy and organizing your thing. This is a great word. This is a great word. Flip or flip.
Yes.
I haven't looked up the pronunciations. That's my problem here. Which means to fold or roll your socks. So,
yeah, exactly.
So it could be, you know, it could be applying to all kinds of undergarments or lots of t-shirts. And I'm going to go and flip up my closet or my drawer.
Yeah, I mean, this is one that it's you'd think why did someone make up a word for this? I mean, it's something we all do. It doesn't seem like it needs a word, but at some point there was a word, flipe. Yeah, so, you know, we'll even use this in our house. You know, I'll say, honey, I flipped your socks for you.
That's good. I'm sure she appreciates that. So in case you're wondering, listeners, this is Book Lovers Cafe, and today we are talking to Joe Gillard. He's the author of The Little Book of Lost Words, and we've been talking and having a lot of fun with some of these lost words. And also you're listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM Port Townsend. And I'm your host, Chris Wilson. So, another thing in this book, Joe, that I loved was that every single word is accompanied by a suitable piece of art. So, can you tell us a little bit about how the art came to be matched up with some of these words and where it was found? And just tell us about it. It's a big part of the book.
It is. It was actually one of the major selling points when we took this proposal to the publisher is because, you know, the video itself had the words and in the background were pieces of old, mostly Renaissance era art pieces that matched tried to match the description as close as possible. And so part of what they really liked about the video was these accompanying images. So the art was, like you said, a big part of getting the book sold, and of course became something that was printed alongside the words in the book, which of course is a much bigger deal at a publisher than just a few illustrations. And so I had to go and, you know, find these hundreds of these high definition works of art and make sure that they were in the public domain or we had permission to use them. And thankfully there were a handful of museums which offer these for any use, digital scans of these art, for example, the Met Museum, and some others. And actually when we got to visit the Met, last year, I got I got to see my book in their gift shop, which made me very happy.
Oh,
see
great.
It come full circle.
That is great. That is great. Yeah, so because of this book, you know, there have been serendipitous things that have happened to you. So, you know, what's been the impact on your life for some of these books? Who have you met? Where have you gone?
Yeah, the publicist at the publisher tried to get as many, you know, interviews when this book came out as possible. There was one appearance on NPR's Here and Now, and because of that, it was Will Shortz, the crossword puzzle of the New York Times, reached out to me. I got an email in the morning from Will Shortz, and I thought, The Will Shortz? Okay, there it is in my Gmail, and he said he has an annual conference for word nerds and puzzle people, and he calls it the Wonderful World of Words. And I didn't know about it, but sure enough, they do it every year at Mohonk in upstate New York. And so he invited me to be a speaker there and do a presentation, which was so much fun. And getting to spend time hanging out with Will and some of the other speakers at the time was so much fun.
Does he have a picnic? Not a picnic. Does he have a ping pong table set up there? That's his passion. he likes to play ping pong while thinking about crossword puzzle clues. I don't know.
You're right. You're right. You know. He would have been overjoyed that you knew that, I'm sure. Yes, he loved to talk about ping pong and many other, you know, many other passions of his. Mm-hmm. He considers himself a very, you know, once he gets into something, he goes 100% full throttle on it.
He's a fun guy. And even though I've never been able to do the New York crossword puzzle, they now have mini puzzles on the New York Times website, which are kind of like about the size of a Sudoku box. And you try to do them as quickly as you can. So that's become a new fun thing that I like to do. So you have traveled, and, you know, history kind of goes with travel. I saw a picture of you at a very kind of iconic Mediterranean site. Can you tell us about that and some of your history travels?
Sure. Yeah. For our honeymoon, my wife and I went to Greece and Italy, places that we've, you know, all wanted to go for a long time, obviously. And I've always wanted to see the Palace of Knossos on Crete, which is a just completely fascinating and beautiful site of ancient ruins and reconstructed ruins on Crete, where the kingdom kind of the Minoan civilization there. And so it's a beautiful, beautiful and unique ruins that there's just so much fascinating history built into those ruins. Mm-hmm. And so for us, it was a dream come true.
Quite the place to go. And now bringing us around to today, you're here in Port Townsend and you have, you know, kind of like a real job and you're working for Centrum. So what's going on at Centrum and now how are you involved? What's your role there?
Well, I'm the marketing manager. I started last year, and I was so grateful for them for giving me this opportunity. I am a lifelong, for the most part, lifelong resident of Port Townsend, so obviously familiar with Centrum and very much support their mission and what they do as somebody who grew up in Port Townsend and took advantage of the arts offering for youth. And in all the different ways that Port Townsend offers that. And I personally benefited very much from having the privilege and liberty to be able to work and exercise artistic interests and things like that in music and various things. And so for me to be able to work at Centrum and help push that mission forward for new generations is very fulfilling. Mm-hmm. And so I'm grateful for my for the ability to have that position there.
Right. And Centrum has a lot of virtual events right now. And also, as we move through the summer into the fall, there will be more and more things that we can attend in person. I even heard a rumor about some large tents that... Are there really large tents going to appear that can withstand 90-mile-an-hour winds?
We are working on every way that we can think of to make sure that, this summer doesn't pass us by and that the Centrum fans from the town will get to experience Centrum in one way or another. And so we're looking at lots of different ways, including virtual and maybe some hybrid offerings in the summer and fall. And of course, we'll be back as soon as we can, hopefully next year for in-person events. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, we're really expanding our reach farther with these virtual events, or trying to, to make sure that people from, all over the world will be able to.
I am really looking forward to that, as well as all of our listeners. And in the meantime, we can occupy ourselves with the little book of lost words, and we can look up fun ideas and videos on History Hustle. And I want to thank you. We're talking to Joe Gillard today, and it's been a fun time with you. And I'd like to invite everyone to join me next time to talk more about books and authors. I'm your host, Chris Wilson. You can listen to past shows and other programs from the podcast page on the website at kptz.org. You can make a donation to the station there as well, helping all our volunteers and supporters. Thank you very much for making this wonderful radio station possible.
They've made me feel like a prisoner. They've made me feel set free. They've made me feel like a criminal. Made me feel like a king. Lifted my heart to places I've never been, and they've dragged me down back to where I began. Words can build you up, words can break you down, start a fire in your heart or put it out. Is the only thing